high on the 106th floor of the Ogilvy Broadcast Demographic Corporation in New York City. Two executives sit in conference.
The latest global music dominator computer analysis shows that our intelligently rigid demographics are failing in Southeast Michigan.
Let's get a new radio station started there right away.
Yes. I'm thinking light jazz. Yes, that's the ticket.
What about the emerging target demographic of adult urban soulless?
Or perhaps alternative top 10. It's really emerging.
Wait a minute. The computer is giving us a new readout. It says that rigid demographics don't appeal to human beings at all.
That can't be! How can people like more than one thing at a time?
The computer detects some kind of paradigm shift. You see, people are tuning in to this bizarre frequency. It's on the left side of the dial.
Why, I've never turned my dial to that side before. Let me see that. It's less than 100. It's 88.3 WCBN FM Ann Arbor, and it seems to be spreading throughout the world.
Courtesy of www.wcbn.org on the internet.
The internet? I thought that was just for advertising.
And porn.
Let's launch one of these cutting-edge stations. We'll play everything from Kenny G to light jazz.
It's revolutionary. I like it.
Don't take your musical cues from corporate broadcast headquarters. Tune into Freeform on WCBN FM Ann Arbor to hear DJs who care about music, not demographics.
I got your name, got your notebooks.
am I gonna fit in? Jumped in the cab, here I am for the first time. To the right, and I see the Hollywood sign. This is all so crazy. Everybody seems so famous. My tummy's turning, and I'm feeling kind of homesick. Too much pressure, and I'm nervous. When the taxi man turned on the radio, and the Jay-Z song was on. And the Jay-Z song was on. Jay-Z song was on. So I put my hands up and playing my song. The butterflies fly.
Now, like, who's that man with a farmer's tan? Gotta be from out of town. It's so hard with my bros not around me. It's definitely not a Halloween party. All I see are pop collars. Guess it isn't for a holler. My tummy's turning and I'm feeling kind of homesick. Too much pressure and I'm nervous. And a DJ plays my favorite tune. And a banjo song was on. A banjo song was on. A banjo song was on.
Let's do it live. You're listening to WCBN FM Ann Arbor 88.3. This is Jeffrey Greenbean with DJ Local and Kim Baer, the Farmers Marketers, with us in spirit at this moment. And last night I had the pleasure of interviewing a potential Michigan governor. And I got a question for all you listeners. Have you thought about who's going to be the next Michigan governor? I think it's an important question. And it's about time that we pay some attention, right? So let me just set the stage here for anybody just catching up. We've got several candidates on the Democratic side. We've got Alma Wheeler-Smith, a state representative. We've got Virge Bernero, who's the mayor of Lansing. And I think we have Andy Dillon as well, who's the House Speaker. And on the Republican side, we've got Rick Snyder out of Ann Arbor. You might have seen the Rick for Michigan office. He's running as One Tough Nerd. He was the he worked for Gateway, and he is one of the directors of Ann Arbor Spark. So if you want to talk to any entrepreneurs in town who have been working with Ann Arbor Spark, maybe we can get some scoop on him. And I think we have Mike Cox in the race and Pete Hoekstra. So anyway, One lead that I got was that Alma Wheeler-Smith, Representative Smith, is an excellent candidate, but she's an underdog. And I was very curious about this, so I contacted her, and I was able to set up an interview. So Kim and I last night spoke with her, and it was very interesting. And I hope that everyone will listen carefully and follow up and treat this as an important issue. So why don't you hit play on that interview, Shannon?
We are heading into May 11th, which is the official filing deadline for candidates who want to be in the race for governor. And we will be running until August 3rd. That is the primary. So between May 11th and August 3rd, we will be doing a lot of meetings, town halls, campus appearances, radio programs, broadcast wherever we can hit the public and get them inspired to participate in this election. As you said at the very beginning of the program, this is a critical election for the state of Michigan. We hear that all the time, but the next governor is going to be responsible for actually turning the state around, creating new jobs, investing in our human capital, and those are our citizens, so that we have the capacity to help our businesses be strong and to attract new businesses to Michigan. Well, I think for the students, the first thing they probably know well firsthand is that the state of Michigan has been in an economic crisis. We have been reducing our budget steadily for the last 6 years, and that has meant a loss of revenue to the universities from the state. We have eliminated financial aid programs, and we have to have a governor who is going to turn that around. Students are leaving the universities with tens of thousands of dollars of debt. That's no way to begin whatever your next hurdle in life is going to be. So I have a program that we call Michigan Future, and it starts with a preschool program for universal preschool for four-year-olds and bookends the K-12 system with a free tuition program for vocational technical centers, community colleges, and our public universities so that the entire tuition will be paid for your first 4 years of graduate education.
How about if we talk a little bit about how you got into politics and just your story and your motivation?
Well, I grew up in a politically active family in Washtenaw County and in Ann Arbor. My dad was on the faculty at the University of Michigan Medical School, the first black professor at the university. And they were very active in civil rights here in Ann Arbor, trying very hard to make sure that there were job opportunities other than cook, janitor, and maid for black populations, that there were teachers and administrators in the public schools that looked like the black kids that attended the public schools, that we had housing, integrated housing opportunities so that the neighborhood school wasn't the same school for all black families. And they were successful in working with black and white partners in the community to get that achieved. We, as their daughters, learned political strategy at the dining table. And it was a great opportunity for us to see how public service and civic responsibility took hold to change a community. The university used to tell my dad, Al, you could get your full professorship in a heartbeat if you would just stop rocking the boat. And he said, you know, my daughters have to live in a different world, and I will rock the boat until I die. Well, he was close to retirement when he got his full professorship. And a family tragedy that really got my family very invested in public service. My twin sister Lucille caught her dress on fire at age 2 in South Carolina, and when she ran to mom, she fanned the flames and was critically burned. The ambulance that came to take Lucille to the hospital turned around and let her die in my mom's arms because the family was black. They weren't going to take her to their hospital. And from that, my parents taught me and my two sisters that family value that we base all of our public policy on, that the color of your skin and the depth of your wallet and the place where you live must never limit your opportunity for a great quality of life. That family value will underpin my administration in the governor's office of the state of Michigan. And I think it is important that we talk about social justice and equality and opportunity for all of our citizens here in the state. We can't afford to leave one child's brain untapped. Our diversity, our economic development, our power as people is limited if we limit people's opportunities. We don't know where the next Bill Gates or the next genius is going to come from. But if we don't expose the kids to the opportunity, we will lose. Mm-hmm. So education is key to our economic recovery here in the state of Michigan. And I want to make that possible. We need 0 to 4, work with our families so that parents are engaging their children in very early learning processes, a preschool that begins at 4, so the kids are ready and firing on all of their cylinders to learn in kindergarten through 12. And then we need that 4-year commitment to our students. Or our commitment for a 4-year degree to our students so that they know they can go on.
So in talking about civil rights, one of the things that your campaign says is that you support full inclusion for each citizen in Michigan's benefits and opportunities. And I wonder if you consider the benefit of marriage to be a civil right.
I certainly do. I think we send a terrible message to the businesses here, the citizens, and any business that would like to locate in Michigan, that we are an inhospitable environment for their employees if their employees are different, if they are gay, lesbian, transgender, if they are immigrants. We have constitutional amendments that say you needn't bother to come, because we aren't going to treat your employees as if they were equal citizens. I think it is critically important that we change that message.
Me too.
Yes.
There's a couple other issues. One thing that I like about you is that I get the feeling that you're involved with a lot of these issues personally. And I saw that you were speaking on a panel about Michigan prisoner reentry programs.
Yes.
I think that's another big issue in Michigan.
It's a huge issue in Michigan. We average about $32,000 per prisoner per year. It takes 23% of our general fund to pay for the prison facilities and housing prisoners. We are tough on crime. We are not smart on crime.
23%?
Yes, 23% of our general fund. We are spending more on corrections than we spend on higher education. That says something really is really skewed about our values here in the state of Michigan. We should be downsizing our prisons, releasing people who have done their programming and completed some kind of training so that they can go out and be productive citizens. We need to be looking hard at why they are in there and whether or not they need to continue to be there. We have the longest serving prisoners in the country. We have many of our citizens in the prisons are old, and they are unhealthy. And prison is not the place for them to be. The University of Michigan just completed a study of mental health in the prison systems, and we have a very significant population of the mentally ill in our prisons. I can remember Sheriff Ron Scheibel when I was on the county commission and starting a run for the Michigan Senate, coming to me and saying, "Alma, I am not the mental health institution for the state of Michigan." Well, we had closed our institutions, and we did not develop the group homes that people had been told would be in place to receive people coming out on medications but needing some kind of supervision. So when they walk down the street without having taken their meds for days, and people perceive them as being threatening because they were waving their arms and talking to themselves, they would call the police department or the sheriff's department, and those people would go into the jail system. And after a while, as they deteriorated, they would commit crimes. And then we found them in the prisons of the state of Michigan. We have a significant mentally ill population, and their treatment in a prison system is not the appropriate setting. But so we're paying $32,000 and $33,000 a year to take care of them.
23% of the general fund, that's just a very depressing statistic.
It is a staggering statistic, and it needs to change.
You're listening to WCBN FM Ann Arbor. This is Arborama, a show about local action. And this is Jeffrey Greenbean. We're playing you a recorded interview that we did last night, Kim Bayer and I, with Representative Alma Wheeler-Smith, who is running for governor of Michigan this over the next couple months. And I think if people get involved now, if they pay attention to who all the candidates are who are putting their hat in the ring, we can make sure that we get the best choices for the final vote and make sure the right person gets in and make sure Michigan doesn't make a wrong turn and we actually make a good path forward, and it's very important. So let's go back into the interview.
Well, I think we ought to... Well, I think we ought to... Well, I think we ought to. Paying something for prevention, whether it's an incentive for people to eat well, to exercise by giving them a break on their insurance premiums, I think we should be looking at that.
So perhaps having insurance companies offer $100 toward a community-supported agriculture farm share?
You know, that's a great idea.
They do that in Wisconsin.
Well, I'm going to look into it.
I hope you will.
It's a solid idea. Making certain, as we do right now, that when we give people family independent support and they have food stamps that and their bridge cards, that they use them, they can use them for a 10% bonus, sort of, at the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that they're having access to good, nutritious food. I'm very excited about urban farming initiatives because right now grocery stores are not locating in the urban areas, and people are stuck with these pantries at the gas stations that stock unhealthy fast foods. So having an urban garden where people can take advantage of fresh produce is terrific.
Representative Smith, is it true that your office is close to Growing Hope, which is an urban agriculture?
I'm across the street from Growing Hope. Worked with Growing Hope when it was new. So it is, you know, we're seeing good growth in this area, and it benefits citizens who don't have access to quality, nutritious foods.
You're probably busy with your campaign, but I'm wondering if you've watched any of Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution.
You know, I didn't watch it, but I can tell you I've heard about it.
Well,
and we would love to bring him here.
That would be so fantastic.
Yes.
Because Michigan is also one of the supposedly fattest states in the country, and I am wondering what we can do at the state level to help schools feed our kids better.
Well, we need to be working with the farmers, and the schools really have taken the initiative in many cases of changing their feeding behavior for kids. The federal government has delivered certain nutrition requirements for the kitchens, but we are now, you know, privatizing the food operations in many of our school districts and getting products delivered that have been created en masse and delivered a day or two ahead of time. So quality breaks down. I am interested in seeing us do fresh fruits and vegetables. And
I think most people don't know that a lot of schools no longer have the facilities or the ability to actually cook.
That's right.
And that seems like a huge change, and one that really doesn't support our kids' health very well.
In order to save dollars, many of the school districts have outsourced the food, lunches, and for those that do breakfast programs, that too has been outsourced. And kids need to see food in preparation and to understand that, you know, this is how you put a meal together, and this is what a fresh product looks like.
Well, that's one of the things that Jeff and I were laughing about or crying about before the show, that on the Jamie Oliver program, kids were shown things, common things like tomatoes and eggplants and cucumbers, and they did not know what they were.
Right.
And so that seems like a crucial piece that could be happening in the classroom.
That's right. When you ask some kids where milk comes from and they tell you that bottle in the grocery store, and mm-hmm. it's like, wait a minute, there's a disconnect here. Our kids need to see fresh fruits and vegetables. And
general health education would be important too.
It certainly would.
Well, so that...
And we've defunded our public health systems. They have not seen an increase in probably 13 years. So those people who used to be in the community working with school children, making sure that they understood about nutrition and exercise, are no longer able to deliver those programs and services because there are so few of them. and they are doing the essential programs of immunization and epidemiology, making disease control. So we have lost that expertise to our schools.
So in order to encourage people to understand where food comes from, what kind of garden would you plant at the state capitol?
Oh, what a great question. We have lovely flower beds at the state capitol, and I know that we can integrate very beautiful vegetable plants in those flowers.
Edible landscaping.
That's right. We have edible landscaping, and you have kale, and the chives have a beautiful spring flower. We can just use many products. I'm not sure tomato plants would go over big on the Capitol lawn because we never. But the squirrels would have a heyday. But it's, you know, it's possible to do that, integrating vegetables into the flower beds.
Well, I think it sends a really important message to citizens when a government entity sets an example like that and starts to incorporate food into our landscape.
Yes, we had a farmers market twice last summer, maybe more times than that, on the Capitol lawn. It was a great experience.
Mm-hmm.
People flooded out of their offices to take advantage of the fresh produce, and it really taught us the importance of making fresh products available to the citizens at a reasonable rate of cost. You know, it was just great.
Well, those kinds of food questions also get back to the economy. So one of the things that I've heard Orrin Hesterman and other people say is that Michigan needs to return to its first economy, which is agriculture. And I know that one of your thoughts is that we need to diversify the economy.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering if you think those two come together.
Agriculture is probably the second strongest economic component here in Michigan, and it has been a growth sector for us. And we really do need to focus more on that business sector of the economy. We have smart farmers. We have them producing more on an acre than they could before with a less hazardous outcome for the environment. Fewer pesticides being used, more organic farming happening, and those are very important changes to the agricultural community as we don't load our rivers and streams that are so critical for our recreation here in Michigan with pesticides and fertilizers that promote algae growth and choke the streams.
Well, Michigan is the second most agriculturally diverse state in the country, as I'm sure you know, and it seems that we still grow mostly commodity crops, even though it's a state that has the potential to grow so much food for people, and it seems like that also is a way to improve our health. I'm wondering if there's a potential for a state equivalent to the USDA's Know Your Food, Know Your Farmer.
There is, and we do promote truck farming and farmers markets and getting the produce from the fields. In some cases, we have some really enterprising orchard managers who bring the kids in on the right season for picking so that they see the products in the field and they are picking them and taking home very fresh fruit or vegetables. It's important that we look at what other states are doing to bring the agricultural community closer to home. I served for a few moments in my lifetime on the Washtenaw County Extension Service Board, and it was a real eye-opener about what we weren't doing to inform our citizens about agriculture and what they could do within a flower box to promote their own produce. So it's important for us to get that information out, and the Extension Service is an excellent resource for individuals who have, you know, 10 feet that they want to grow, and they can tell them how to use that most effectively. I'm sort of chuckling here, thinking that I am talking to University of Michigan students about the agricultural economy of the state of Michigan and the importance of produce. And then I sort of did one of those head slaps that said, this is critical information for them, because they can, within their dorm rooms, they can be growing their tomatoes for, you know, a snack at the end of the day that isn't fattening, that is healthy, that will certainly promote a good relationship with them and the plants that they need for good life.
Well, but also at places like Michigan, and I'm sure other places, there are sustainability initiatives that include food.
Yes.
And there are farm-to-school programs at many schools and at universities, too.
Yes.
And that's an important issue to students. And one of the things that I've heard recently is that students are looking for what they call real jobs, or how do they say it? Looking at jobs on a farm as a way to have a real experience with life that's not a corporate experience.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of farms that hire students, and that instead of hiring people straight out of high school, are now hiring students from the School of Natural Resources and Environment.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're looking for that. And so I think that it is something that is important to students.
What about the general idea of relocalization and having local resilient economies where you're when you have small scale businesses, but you're selling locally, you're on a more manageable scale. So I've heard of the recommendation to do a leakage analysis where you see where our money is going for imports and try and spur entrepreneurship to produce those goods locally. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I think that's a very important endeavor for us. We need, that creates a lot of diversity for jobs and business opportunities for the state. And where we have people who are creative enough to find that niche in the economy and develop it cost effectively so that they are promoting from within and not being defeated by the big box stores that have the same product that's made in a foreign country that they can sell for $2 instead of $20, we do need to find out how to make that cost-effective local product, because people are always looking for a bargain and don't understand the value of buying locally when they can save $8.
So as far as environmental regulation, do you think we've done a proper job looking at issues like the Detroit incinerator, or approving new coal-fired power plants, or approving sulfide mining in the Upper Peninsula?
You know, I know that people complain about the length of time it takes to permit, but I think we have done the due diligence that is important. The sulfide mining at the, in the UP is still in the process of permitting. And we can't throw out the quality of our environment for speed, and where it is required that we vet carefully and, again, do the due diligence that says this process will also protect the environment and not poison the air, the water, or the soil, then we move forward with that product. The governor had a good and well-defined permitting process in place for new coal-fired plants. But I don't know if she was intimidated or browbeaten into making it go faster. there is no such thing as clean coal. There is a cleaner coal with a better technology to protect the air, but we will still have particulate matter entering the atmosphere. And young people and old people whose health will be affected by that release of particulate matter, kids who will go to school with asthma levels that are high, and that affects their ability to learn. We have to make a critical balance between the health and the learning capacity of our citizens and our energy systems. And we should be relying on more alternative fuels. Our renewable portfolio standard is 10%. That is probably among the lowest in the country. We need to be pushing for a higher renewable source of fuel. We have businesses here in the state that develop solar panels, but we have to create the incentive for people to use alternatives and for the utility companies to want to invest in those sustainable products.
She was a songbird, singer, gunslinger, with a twinkle in her eye. Was a word twister, a mind bender, a writer in the sky. He said, I love you for your wishes, and you can have my lucky penny. She said, what do you think this is? I love you for the sake of loving, and that's plenty. Everything goes round and round and up and down, and side by side my heart is a rodeo clown.
All right, we're back. WCBN FM, Ann Arbor 88.3, Arborama, show about what's going on in Michigan. Right now we're talking about the governor's race happening this year, 2010. Pretty important. And we're playing an interview we did last night with Representative Alma Wheeler Smith. And I just want to say to all you other Michigan governor candidates out there, we'd love to have you on. Maybe we'll try and get Rick Snyder next, Ann Arbor person. Email us at governor@arborama.org or info@arborama.org, or check out our blog, arborama.org, and let us know if you have any questions or feedback or any other political issues you want to talk about. So let's get back into the interview with Representative Smith.
I have a three-prong revenue plan for the state of Michigan. I know you've heard the governor talking about the expansion of sales tax to services and reducing the sales tax rate to 5.5%. That was my proposal in November of last year, and we need to move forward with that. We have to tax the areas of growth here in Michigan. No longer are the sales of products the driving force for revenue. Services and purchase of services is the driving force for revenue in the state of Michigan, and we're not taxing it. So if we include that in the mainstream of the economy, the state's revenue, then we actually deliver about $1.5 billion. We also need to be looking at tax loopholes that we've created over the decades and say what's working productively for the state of Michigan in, by the way of economic development or development of our human talent, and keep those programs, but those that are just gifts to our friends because at one point in time we had money or we wanted to achieve a certain policy. Let me use, for example, the satellite tax credit that we gave to help get penetration of satellites here in the state, or a cable incentive that we created 20 years ago. We have penetration of cable in Michigan. They don't need any more tax breaks to do that. It's been done. But we still give that credit. We need to take a good hard look at these things and say, are they making sense? If we do that, we can get anywhere from $2 to $4 billion back into the state's revenue stream. People will call those tax increases, but they really aren't. It is a recognition of good spending, good fiscal responsibility, and bringing dollars back into the coffers. And we would be able to reinstate financial aid. Certainly the Michigan Promise, the Michigan Future would be paid for with those dollars. Health care would be provided for with those dollars. We've got a tremendous first step out of the federal government, but states are still being charged with the responsibility of making those programs work. We have to create an exchange here in Michigan, and I propose to work with our other seven Great Lakes states to create an eight-state exchange that gives us a very large pool to keep costs down, and to be very creative with quality.
One of the things that I read was that you were interested in doing away with tax incentives for onesie-twosie kinds of businesses and instead encouraging the growth of entire sectors. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Well, the tax incentives that we use are primarily to attract businesses to the state of Michigan, and to keep those here, it's a bribe to or an incentive to help them create additional jobs. They often don't live up to the agreement because the jobs aren't created, and we continue to give them a tax break. We need to stop that because it's not productive for our growth. We also know that businesses are attracted to a state not because of the tax pattern, but because of other elements that are more important to them. How close are they to a population that is well-educated and skilled? What is the infrastructure like that moves their goods and services? How close are they to a university that does a research and development program that fits with their business plan? How close are they to another business that will use their product? And then they look at the tax that they will be charged. And if it's fair and predictable, they're really not that concerned. Michigan is in the middle of the pack. So they're not concerned with the rate that we're charging. It's, can I tell you what it's going to be in 3 years? So we're giving people money for a decision that they are making on other criteria.
That's not very smart.
No, it isn't very smart. The smarter incentive for business is the Michigan's future, where we have a development in our human capital. We're paying the tuition for employees' children to go to college, something that every parent knows their kid is going to need. And businesses will come just as they do with the Kalamazoo Promise. That Kalamazoo Promise has attracted new businesses to Kalamazoo. It's one of the few growth areas in the state in terms of new businesses coming in, and those that are there growing. It's caused parents to be more focused on their children's education, and their involvement in the schools has increased dramatically. Students themselves are looking at the fact that they will be able to go to college, that it will be paid for. And they are buckling down and getting their studies, and grades are going up, their test performance is going up, and it's that small, well, it's a huge incentive actually, that has been given to them that has proven that it is a great economic development tool, more effective than tax breaks for businesses that would locate there.
Investing in education.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. And if it's only good for us for a couple of years while the other states figure out how they can pay for something identical to it, that's fine too, because we need to develop our talent here in the United States so that we can be more competitive. Other countries pay for the college education of their kids. Developing countries focus their dollars on paying for college for their kids because they know they need that skilled and educated workforce. And here in the United States, that is not where we are focused. It's like those who have can go to school, and those who can't, well, you will be our always underclass that we have to either take care of, or, you know, we'll find a corner for you to crawl into and a bridge that you can live under. That is not what the United States or the state of Michigan should be about.
It does seem like that is a huge thing that Michigan could do to make students want to stay in Michigan.
Yes, absolutely.
Which sectors of the economy do you want to encourage?
Well, I want to encourage all of them. I don't think that we as government should be picking winners and losers. I think we create the environment that makes it possible for every business to succeed, whether it's a brew pub or a biotech company or a life sciences business. We want every business to be successful, and we can do that by creating a tax structure that is predictable and fair, a regulatory system that works for the businesses, that gives them the regulation level that lets them be successful. At the same time, it is sufficient to protect our environment. We would have a pure Michigan for only 5 months if we did away with the regulatory system here in the state of Michigan. We can't afford to lose the quality of our environment. It is one of the things that makes us an attractive state for people to live in. So that regulatory system is critically important. Can it be more effective in terms of time? Yes, if we had more employees to deliver the services and to do the work of completing a permit. But we have so downsized state government because we haven't had the money. We've cut $3 billion out of our employee salaries alone between 2000 and today. We have reduced our state payroll by 33% from over that same period of time. When people don't get programs and services, they get pretty angry. But they are always talking about we have too many employees and we pay them too much. It's a dilemma that we need someone in the governor's office to talk about, how critically important it is to have the right number of people to get the job done effectively.
So why do you think that people generally are dissatisfied with the Michigan government at this time?
You know, I think they are placing the responsibility for economic situation at the feet of government, and it really doesn't appropriately belong there. Government did not make the bad business decisions of the big three that didn't move away from a product that the consumer wasn't buying quickly enough. Ford took a look at what the situation was and said, we're going to borrow, we're going to do what we need to do to turn our production around to make the kind of vehicles that people are buying and to make vehicles of quality. And they never got into the position of having to go into bankruptcy. But the other companies just didn't seem to believe that Michigan and United States drivers were not interested in their cars. So those were bad decisions, and because we don't have a tremendously diverse industry, when the car companies went down, all of the product providers to them also suffered. And that certainly wasn't a decision of government. We can make the environment where businesses can be successful happen, but we can't make the decisions for them. But some of this lack of revenue for the state, however, is our own fault. Back in 1999, when John Engler proposed tax cut for the state of Michigan of 0.5%, he was told that that tax cut would create a deficit of $1.2 billion by the end of 2002. When I left the Michigan Senate in 2002, we had a $1.2 billion deficit. The Budget Stabilization Fund had been eliminated. We had taken money from many one-time programs and just eliminated them because there was no further funding. The state was in a terrible spot, and it, you know, to her credit, the governor has, even though it's been a cuts budget for almost all of the years she's been in government, she has maintained priorities around the safety net so that as more and more people needed help from Medicaid or needed the Family Independence Program to help them make ends meet, those programs were still there, but our safety net has been shredded. And people are falling through the cracks, and we are going to begin losing folks because we don't have the wherewithal to support the human services programs that help them buy food for the family and keep the roof over their heads.
All right, we're listening to an interview with Representative Elma Wheeler-Smith. She's a candidate for Michigan governor. And that's going on this year, 2010. We're going to have a final vote in November, and the primary vote will be in August, I believe. And you're listening to WCBN-FM Ann Arbor 88.3, Arborama. For more information about Representative Smith's campaign, go to www.elmaformichigan.org or search for her on Facebook. And she's got an event coming up tonight, a Detroit panel or a town hall discussion. So check her website for details. Let's go back in to the interview. So Representative Smith, do you have any events coming up, any debates, any town hall meetings?
I have a town hall meeting in Detroit with Representative Fred Durhall. It will be on the Twitter and on the website, almaformichigan.com. There are so many new social networks that come up. We have limited ourselves to four. So
so what's your Twitter handle, Alma for Michigan?
Yes, it is.
That's fantastic.
That's how I can remember it.
If you could basically encapsulate what your vision for Michigan is, or in other words, what differentiates you as a candidate in what you're going for, what would you say?
I am going for an investment in our human capital here in Michigan, because that is the product or the thing that will turn this state around. It will create jobs, and it will create opportunity for our citizens. It will keep our people here in Michigan. We will grow vibrant cities because we have a resilient population. It is my intention to take Michigan from the bottom 10 states where we find ourselves now to the top 5 states and many facets of our economic development.
One of the healthiest states, right?
One of the healthiest states, one of the smartest states, one of the most resilient states and creative states. It is our opportunity to change what Michigan used to be into what Michigan will be. And this whole gubernatorial election this year is about just that.
That all sounds fantastic.
Well, it's going to be hard work. It will be a tough slog, but I am a tough individual, and I am not afraid to fight with a legislator.